Pancha Shirshahina Guptam Parati Harena Sarvataha Anveshamanam Rishabham Aprodham Kamarupinim. The woman was protected on all sides by a five-hooded snake. She was very beautiful and young, and she appeared very anxious to find a suitable husband. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The vital force of a living entity includes the five kinds of air working within the body, which are known as prana, apana, dhyana, samana, and udana. The vital force is compared to a serpent, because a serpent can live by simply drinking air. The vital force carried by the air is described as pratihara, or the bodyguard. Without the vital force, one cannot live for a moment. Indeed, all the senses are working under the protection of the vital force. The woman who represents intelligence was searching after a husband. This indicates that intelligence cannot act without consciousness. A beautiful woman is useless unless protected by the proper husband. Intelligence must always be very fresh. Therefore, the word aprodha, very young, is used here. Material enjoyment means utilizing the intelligence for the sake of rupa, rasa, gandha, shabda, and sparsha, or form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. We are reading today from Canto 4 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 25, entitled Characteristics of King Puranjan, Text 21. King Puranjan represents the spiritual consciousness of the living entity, searching for happiness. When we are entrapped within the material state of consciousness, we search for happiness through the temporary facilities of material nature. We know that the spirit soul is the exclusive property of Krishna. Krishna is the enjoyer. He is Purusha. The spirit soul is eternally meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Forgetfulness of this is the basis of material bondage. Forgetfulness of this is the cause of all suffering. It is our constitutional nature to be enjoyed. The practical method by which we give enjoyment to Krishna is devotional service. Jivara Swarupai Krishnara Nitya Das. We are eternally servant of Krishna, which means we are eternally to be enjoyed by Krishna. Krishna declares in Gita that it is only by devotional service that I reveal myself as I am. Bhaktyatvananyaya shakya aham evam vijorta. What really this means is it is only bhakti that gives pleasure to Krishna. Gyan, mystic cities, fruitive accomplishments within this world give no pleasure whatsoever to Krishna. Perhaps they can help us find more happiness on a superficial, artificial level. But Krishna is only satisfied by bhakti or devotion. Therefore, the process of bhakti yoga is the only path which is in harmony with the nature of the soul. Every other path of approaching the Supreme is either artificial or incomplete, because they do not serve the essential needs of the soul, which is to be enjoyed by Krishna. We may gain some enjoyment, but that enjoyment is actually a cause of bondage and suffering, because they entangle us more and more in the artificial imposition that on the enjoyer. The more you enjoy, the more the misconception is perpetuated. The spirit soul is enjoyed through devotional service. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the highest, most perfect of all scriptures, kicks out all other approaches to God as cheating religion. Because although for those who are on a lower platform, searching economic development, sense gratification, religiosity or liberation, salvation, for them, these sub-religious principles are very, very great ideals to aspire for. But from the point of view of the true inherent needs of the soul, everything but pure devotional service is cheating. Cheating us of the real aspiration of the heart, to be enjoyed. Such a fundamental principle is so simple yet so difficult to understand. That we are all eternally meant to be enjoyed by God. And Krishna only feels happiness when we offer him love. Therefore, all of our attempts for happiness outside of devotional service create further bondage in illusion. Puranjan is searching for such happiness. It is described in today's text, number 21, how he comes in contact with a very, very beautiful lady. Srila Prabhupada describes how the woman represents intelligence. And she's searching after a husband. Prabhupada says, this indicates that intelligence cannot act without consciousness. In order to find pleasure in this world, we require proper intelligence. Srila Prabhupada would often say that the greatest need in society is for first-class men and women, people who actually have pure intelligence. Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, it describes Krishna Varnam Tvisa Krishnam Sangopangasha Parasharam Yajyai Sankirtanas, that one who has good intelligence in this age, they will worship the Supreme Lord who has appeared in a beautiful golden form through the chanting of the holy names. Sumedasha means good intelligence, pure intelligence. So this is the basis. If our consciousness is influenced by bad intelligence, it will be the cause of our downfall. It is described in the Bhagavatam that bad intelligence is like an unchaste wife. Unchaste wife has many paramours, especially six paramours, the mind and the five senses. When the intelligence wants to enjoy with the mind, enjoy through the five senses, then it is just in due course of time that these five paramours will come back and kill the husband because he becomes their competitor. The more the unchaste wife of the intelligence nourishes by her attention the mind and the senses, the stronger and stronger is their influence. The more powerful they are to overcome and ultimately kill the very nature of our consciousness. Perhaps there's no more miserable situation than to have an unchaste wife, or for a wife to have an unfaithful husband. Very, very difficult. But this is exactly what Bhagavatam describes. If our intelligence is good, then the wife assists her husband in his real mission of life. She brings him peace, she brings him happiness, she brings him ultimately eternal knowledge and eternal realization of the spiritual world. How glorious is such intelligence! But if the intelligence is victimized by serving the needs of the mind and senses under their influence, cheating the consciousness, unfaithful, unchaste to the needs of the soul, and ultimately causes the damnation, condemnation, and destruction of the soul's spiritual instincts. Thus, it is so very important that our intelligence is chaste and faithful. And that is why Krishna speaks the holy scriptures. Real knowledge is to convince our intelligence to direct the mind, direct the senses, direct every aspect of our existence in the service of the husband, the soul, and his real needs. The intelligence is meant to facilitate and serve the needs of the soul, not undermine the needs of the soul. That is why Srila Prabhupada would often call modern educational systems spiritual slaughterhouses. Very graphic, very harsh terminology. Especially he was meeting professors and deans of students of universities. When they would hear him say something like this, it was challenging the very foundation of everything they were giving their lives to. They were working so hard to make society a better place, and Prabhupada is saying that you are simply maintaining spiritual slaughterhouse. How is that? Actually, if you go, don't please, but in the slaughterhouse, don't go there. Actually, in America, believe it or not, in little schools, I don't think they do it anymore because there's been too much violent reactions. But they used to regularly bring children from schools to slaughterhouses on field trips. And the little children would be horrified. They'd be vomiting. They'd be screaming. They'd be crying. Then they decided, let's just keep this whole meat-eating thing
more discreet of what it's really about. It was a horrible situation. Children are so brainwashed and conditioned just to eat whatever they're given, they do not connect the source. But when they actually see what it is, it's horrifying. But by the time they see it, they're so conditioned to eating it that they just go home and just forget what they saw. But actually, when you prepare an animal for slaughter, you feed the animal very, very much. Try to get them really fat and big and very good quality meat. Yes? So yes, the slaughterhouse is very concerned. They don't starve their animals. They feed profusely. And they put all kinds of things in the food so it tastes so good. The animals just keep eating and eating and eating. Yes? They actually put various spices or whatever to make the food taste very, very good, to increase their appetite. So they just eat more and more and more and more and enjoy. For what? The whole purpose of their enjoying is that they could be plundered and killed. So what is this spiritual slaughterhouse Prabhupada is talking about? Feeding young people with so much knowledge, so much education. It's just puffing up their egos and it's puffing up their abilities. But because there's no spiritual foundation, we're not teaching the intelligent how to be chaste and faithful to the needs of the soul. Rather, we're teaching the intelligence how to enjoy to maximum degrees, better than anyone, through the mind and the senses. And part of the process of enjoying the mind and the senses is to learn the very subtle or gross arts, depending on the person, of how to exploit other people's mind, intelligence, and senses. Yes? Because the nature of the soul is to be humble, to be submissive before God. The nature of the conditioned soul is it wants to be proud. It wants to be the Lord. It wants to be the controller. It wants to be honored, respected, glorified. And the greater our intelligence, the greater our capacity to exploit others. Just like today in the Western world, it is coming to India, you'll see. Life used to be so simple. Everyone had their own little business, and they grow to certain extents and become successful. But basically everyone's more or less successful because there's so many little businesses. I have told, in the village I used to live, there were just all these little shops owned by families. And everybody knew everyone. It was very nice. People were happy. Now you go there, none of those places exist. Now there's just huge malls and gigantic supermarkets and department stores that are owned by somebody who lives 3,000 miles away and has 150,000 employees. Nobody knows who's anybody anymore. And all the small business people finished. They have to surrender and give up their vaishya quality of having their own business, and they just have to sweep the floor for someone else. Otherwise, they starve. Few people become rich, and everybody else either has to surrender to them or starve. That's what the Western world is becoming like, economic. There's big companies just devouring all the smaller ones, and then they get so big they start devouring the big ones. Hare Krishna. And very few people find any satisfaction just working like that. So this is just the way big intelligence tries to conquer people with smaller intelligence. Jiva jiva sajivanam. One living being is food for another living being. Now in the animal species, might is right. When we're talking about jiva jiva sajivanam, it means if you're bigger than someone else, then you can eat them. Yes? Just like the frogs eat the insects, and then the snakes eat the frogs, and then the mongoose eats the snakes, and then the tiger eats the mongoose. Yes? This is animal species of life. If you go to the ocean, you'll see little fish eating littler fish, then medium fish eating little fish, then big fish eating medium fish, then real big fish eating big fish, and then big fish eating big fish. Bigger, literally. So much, it's just eating, just devouring. But who's the most powerful of all species? Man. And man's not so strong. We can't fight the tigers, we can't fight the snakes, we can't even fight a dog. Yes, if you don't have a stick, a dog's going to get you and beat you. What makes man so great? His intelligence. I remember I lived in Mithila, which is Janakpur, the place of Sita, where she married Sri Ram. And now it's different, I have told. But in 1972, when I lived there, I didn't see a single truck. Practically no cars. All transportation was elephants. So many elephants. They had traffic jams of elephants. But no one was anxiety because they just keep moving. They just move a little slower. Everyone's happy. No rush. Now, did you ever see these male elephants when they're wild in the jungle? They're the most dangerous of all species. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called offense to a Vaishnava the mad elephant offense. Because there's nothing more dangerous than a mad elephant amongst the lower species. When an elephant goes mad because of their size, they could destroy anything. They can knock down houses. Put a few mad elephants in Chopati, they could knock down buildings. They're huge. They're powerful. And all these male elephants are just roaming wild in the forest. And then you see in Nepal, there's little 4-5-year-old boys sitting on the head of the elephant with a little stick this big, and the elephant will do anything the little boy says. Now, how is that possible? Physically, the elephant could just pick his trunk up, just squeeze that little boy to death, and then just dash him against the ground and make him into nothing but mush. Yes? He has that might. That's why he's the king of other animals, because he can do that. But the little boy has intelligence that the elephant doesn't have. Therefore, he can control the elephant. Intelligence has such tremendous power. And that is why human species is ruling the world, because we have developed intelligence. The lions, the tigers, they're harmless these days. They're either in zoos or they're in circuses jumping through hoops. Man goes through the hoop and jumps through. Does he want to do that? He's meant to be the king of the jungle. Here he is. Everybody's just laughing at him as man is just making him do this and that. That's intelligence. So intelligence is the special feature of power. Why is it as more? Because the subtler you go in material elements, the more power there is. Because the subtler elements control the gross elements. This is what we learn from the holy scriptures. At the time of creation, first from the Mahatattva comes the false ego. The false ego has the power to create intelligence. From the intelligence comes mind. From the mind comes ether, then air, then fire, water, and earth.
The subtler the element, the more power there is to control the grosser elements. That is exactly what mystic yoga is teaching. All these siddhis, prapti siddhi, you could control the gross elements through mantras, which are manipulating the subtle elements. Yes? That is how these so-called miracles are performed. They're not necessarily anything spiritual, these magical miracles. They're just a very subtle understanding of how to manipulate the gross with the subtle. And the most powerful men today are not necessarily the people with the big giant bodies. They're the people with the greatest intelligence, either political intelligence or economic intelligence. They're ruling the world. They're ruling all the species. Because through their intelligence, they could control others. So when Prabhupada talks about spiritual slaughterhouse, he's talking about people who are trained to have such incredibly astute intelligence for manipulating material nature, but unless they understand that the whole purpose of the intelligence is to be a chaste, faithful, supportive wife to the soul and give pleasure to the soul, help the soul give pleasure to Krishna. In Krishna consciousness, the duty of wife is to help her husband, to assist her husband in giving pleasure to Krishna. Not simply giving pleasure to him, but helping him to give pleasure to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains, if you have such a wife, then your home becomes Vaikuntha. Providing you're like Narayan and she's like Lakshmi. And your home is Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. Of course, the Brahmachari ashram is also Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So Brahmacharis shouldn't think they're missing anything. They're two different sectors of the spiritual world as they're manifesting here. But if the wife is unchaste, then the husband's life is simply miserable. And if the husband is not a proper spiritual guide, then the wife's life is miserable. If either one is not playing their role, then they both spiritually suffer. So yes, the purpose of the intelligence is very specific. To serve the needs of the soul, which means to be enjoyed by Krishna through the expression of our love by devotional service. When Srila Prabhupada was at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, very, very prestigious school throughout the world, he was speaking with professors, with administrators, with graduate students, with undergraduate students. They all came to the assembly to hear him speak. And he was very, very respectful to them, but very honest. Because if you're not respectful to someone, they will not listen to you. They will just turn you off. So Prabhupada was very respectful, but he was very honest. And because he was speaking from his heart with genuine love and concern for them, and for what they represent, therefore they had to hear what he said. Whether they were able to follow, that is depending on their conditioning and their sincerity, but they listened to him. Prabhupada said, you have so many subjects that you're offering, but the whole purpose of education is enlightenment, illumination. If you have the wrong basic equation, then all your pursuits on the basis of that wrong equation has to be wrong. Are we the body or are we the soul? Unless we teach people, who am I? What is the soul?
and what is the needs of the soul, what is the nature of the soul, then all other education that we're teaching is simply misleading them. Real morality, real ethics, has its very critical limitations unless they're based on spiritual knowledge. Everything is relative unless it has an absolute foundation. It is a fact. If we build our morality, our ethics, and our integrity on the basis of a relative misconception, then when storms and pressures come upon us, then we will give in. We have to give in. But if our morality, our integrity, and our ethics are standing on the foundation of absolute truth, then whatever storm comes, our integrity will remain firm. And we find this is the quality of the great saints. Even if they're persecuted, even if they're tortured, even if it's the risk of losing everything, they will never move from their spiritual, moral integrity. Because they have realization, they have faith in the absolute. So we see the world today, how people are becoming so corrupt, whether it's in government or in business, or just in family affairs or friendships, even among scientists. People are willing to do and say whatever is required for some relative experience of prosperity or success. And therefore we see the whole morality of society going down, down, down. And it's getting worse year after year after year. On all levels. This is the nature of the age of Kali. If we want to counteract that, then we must have knowledge of the absolute truth. Krishna explains, what is knowledge? To understand that we are all part of God, we are in God, we belong to God, to Krishna. We are not this body. We are not this intelligence. We are the eternal soul. But unless our intelligence is convinced of this fact, then the intelligence will be exploited by the mind, the senses, and the objects of the senses. Thus, Srila Prabhupada appealed to us again and again to read his books, and to distribute his books. Because if somebody understands what he's trying to say, then their intelligence becomes pure, faithful, chaste servants of the soul, rather than unchaste competitors to the soul. Srila Prabhupada was very concerned that every devotee understands our philosophy very, very clearly. Otherwise, without such intelligence, we will be led astray. Maya is so powerful within this world. So powerful. In Kali Yuga, Maya Devi, through illusion, is ruling the entire society of the world. This is the kingdom of Maya. How can we resist those temptations? Temptations to enjoy through the eyes, through the ears, through the nose, through the tongue, through the flesh. We're conditioned since time immemorial to enjoy these things. The animal species knows nothing but enjoying these five senses. And human existence, Prabhupada called, Bhagavatam calls, two-legged animals.
When human society is after the pleasures of the senses and the sense objects, they are simply animals in quality. The difference between animal and human is intelligence. A human's intelligence understands, this is not my happiness. What tastes like nectar in the beginning will taste like poison in the end, so I'm not going to drink that so-called nectar. I'm not going to drink that nicely flavored poison. This is what Narottam Das Thakur explains. Material enjoyment is simply drinking poison. But Maya Devi is so expert. She takes that deadly poison and flavors it so nicely that it tastes like nectar. Now what happens if you drink poison that's flavored like nectar? You enjoy it for some time, but after the enjoyment state is complete, then the poison state starts setting in, and you suffer miserably. Now realistically, simplistically, if someone gave you very, very flavorful poison that you enjoyed like anything, after some hours or some days when the poison sets in, will you think it was worth it? Yes, I'm suffering. Yes, I'm dying. But it was worth it because I enjoyed a lot during those few minutes. You will not think like that. Nobody thinks like that. When the suffering sets in, you're simply full of regrets. But materialistic people don't know, they don't understand, they don't have the intelligence to realize that it's the sweet flavor that they enjoyed, which is none different than the poison that they're suffering from. They can't put the two together. Yehi samsparshacha bhoka dukha jonayeva te atyantabanta konte anathe shuramathe buddha. Krishna tells us, if we can't believe God, then we're in big, big trouble. Krishna knows everything because he has created everything. We can't just figure out how material nature works. But the manufacturer, controller of nature tells us exactly how it works. Krishna says what real intelligence is. Real intelligence is not to take part in the sources of misery, which is sense enjoyment. That is what intelligence is. So easy. But even in Harvard, MIT, and perhaps, I hate to say this, perhaps even IIT, people are not being taught this. Unless somehow or other these places are infiltrated by Vaishnavas. Otherwise they don't know. They're taught how to control material energy in such a great manner through intelligence, but they do not understand Krishna's basic definition of intelligence. That the enjoyments of this world are sources of misery. Dukalaya mashashvatam, because they're temporary. Because they perpetuate the enjoying spirit and obscure the needs of the soul. Prahlad Maharaj was 5 years old. He didn't go to big university. But even the greatest PhD scholar should fall at Prahlad's feet to understand what is knowledge. Prahlad Maharaj said, if you want to free yourself from suffering once and for all, it's a very easy thing. Just stop trying to be happy enjoying your mind and senses. Then you'll never have to suffer again. But as long as you try to enjoy your mind and senses, you have to suffer perpetually. But if you don't know anything else, if you're like an animal without spiritual knowledge, then how can you give up enjoying your mind and senses? Param drisvani vartate. Your intelligence must at least have faith in a higher experience. Because at the beginning stages of spiritual purification, you may not taste much of anything. Your gross senses are calling out for pleasure. They're crying, they're screaming, they're making bargains, they're negotiating, they're doing anything.
They're threatening. Yes. Maya, through the mind and senses, knows exactly how to overcome us. First she says, oh, this is so pleasing. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. The skin is saying enjoy, and the smell is saying enjoy, and the eyes want to enjoy, and the ears and the tongue, everything wants to enjoy. Just enjoy. But when you become a devotee, you realize to some extent with your intelligence, this isn't what I want. And then just like we have seen, I'm not going to explain the exact situations, but many of you will know what I'm referring to as I explain. When you don't give in to the dictations, then there's so many other strategies that set in. First there's temptation. Then chastisement. The mind and senses start chastising. What are you doing? What nonsense? What are you getting out of this? You're not in bliss. You're nothing. You're neither here nor there. So enjoy me. I'm waiting for you. I've given you so much happiness for so many years. Surrender. Dictation. Temptation. Dictation. Then negotiation. Actually, all right. You know, you chant your rounds, but then after your rounds, then you serve me. Otherwise, you're going too much extremism, fanaticism. You have to be balanced. You have to get a lot of sense gratification and a little spiritual life also. That is balance. And as you become more advanced, then you could think about more tapasya. Negotiation. If negotiation doesn't work, then you start bringing in recruitments. Start getting other loved ones and influential people to take the side of the mind and senses to influence you. And even if that doesn't work, then the mind and senses start threatening to commit suicide if you don't serve them nicely. Yes? Many brahmacharis have heard these threats before. Suicide! I will end my body. I will not survive. Impossible. Now, unless we have very, very deep faith, we cannot overcome all these influences. And where does faith come from? Faith is in our intelligence. At the beginning stages, our intelligence must hear from the right sources so that our faith is nourished. Faith is something of the heart. But in order to cultivate that experience of firm faith, our intelligence must be fixed. Srila Prabhupada says, faith comes by hearing in the association of devotees. If you hear in the association of devotees, your intelligence becomes convinced that this is what I want. And that brings about the awakening of faith within the heart. Intelligence is so important. Not only the gross senses, but the subtle senses. Subtle sense enjoyment is ever more powerful than gross. Great yogis of the Ashtanga Yoga system, Jnana Yoga system, some of them have actually mastered not giving in to the gross senses. We have seen some of them do not eat anything. They're just nourished by the air. We have seen total celibacy, living somewhere in the wilderness of jungles or deserts where they practically don't eat, they practically don't sleep. There's no question of any type of sexual enjoyments. Obviously, they're not listening to popular music or watching television. Of course, as Kali Yuga progresses, we'll see little antennas coming out of the caves of the Himalayas. But so far, that's not so frequent at this time. But wait and see. You'll see satellite dishes on top of the caves at Gangotri and Badrikashram. And cellular phones. But there are yogis who have overcome all of these things, but they're still victim to false pride. Because they've mastered over their gross senses in such a way, if they walk by and you don't offer your obeisances to them, they just become angry as fire because you have insulted them. Because they have such a burning, hungry thirst for adoration and distinction. At profit, adoration and distinction is subtle sense gratification. It's the sense gratification of the mind. It's more difficult to control than the senses. But subtler than the mind is the intelligence. Therefore, the intelligence has the potential power to completely control the mind and the senses. Providing the intelligence is chaste and faithful to the soul, the jivatma. If it's not, the intelligence becomes the servant to facilitate the illusions of the mind and the senses. Thus, it is so very important to hear regularly transcendental knowledge. Nasta praeshya bhadreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya. Bhagavati uttamo sloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam is not something that you do 7 days a year during your grandfather's birthday or disappearance day. That's not what Bhagavatam is about. If you want to understand Bhagavatam, you have to understand from the Bhagavatam. Just like if you want to understand Gita, you have to understand how to understand Gita from the Gita. And that is why most people do not understand. Krishna tells Arjuna, bhakto sime shakachiti rahasya gitam tamam. If you want, Arjuna, you can understand this Bhagavad Gita from me because you are my friend and you are my devotee. Therefore, you can understand. We quoted, bhaktyatvananyayashakyas, aham evam vidurajuna. Says Arjuna, you can understand the mysteries of this teaching because you're my devotee. Only through devotional service that one can understand who I am. So Krishna makes it very clear. What is the qualification to understand Gita? To be Krishna's devotee, to be Krishna's friend. Therefore, a devotee understands Bhagavad Gita as it is. If you're not a devotee, if you're not following Krishna's prescription, then you can't understand the Gita as it is. You have to comment on it as you wish it to be. Srila Prabhupada was very strong in this regard. He said, if you want to create your own philosophy, then write your own books. Go ahead to your full content. Write your own books. But don't make your commentaries on Bhagavad Gita. It's immoral. It's unethical. Krishna's saying something and you're giving a completely different interpretation. If you're not a devotee, Krishna says you have no right to understand it. So Prabhupada became very forceful. He said, don't poke your nose in somebody else's business. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's business. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadev Goswami, Veda Vyas, Sutta Goswami. Sutta Goswami is explaining very clearly who can understand the Bhagavatam. It's compiled by Vyasadeva. Not 7 days. If you want to understand Bhagavatam, you must learn from a person Bhagavatam.
from one who is fully following the teachings. Without the person Bhagavatam, the book Bhagavatam is unapproachable. That is why Parikshit Maharaj heard Bhagavatam from Sukadev Goswami. The sages of Naimasharanya heard Bhagavatam from Suta Goswami. This is disciplic succession. Sukadev Goswami heard from his father Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva heard from Narada. Narada heard from Brahma. Brahma heard from Krishna. And Suta Goswami heard from Sukadev Goswami. Throughout the history of Bhagavatam, we find that to understand it as it is, you have to hear from a person, Bhagavatam, in disciplic succession of Vyasadeva. Otherwise, your unchaste intelligence will create so much flowery language to give your own egoistic interpretations. And you don't even know it's egoistic interpretations. You're thinking it's divine revelation. It's not that all people who are teaching incorrect philosophies, it's not that they are purposely cheating people. Many of them really believe earnestly and honestly in their hearts that they're right. They have some revelation, they have some conviction, they have some faith. They really think they're being merciful, compassionate, instruments of the all-pervading, impersonal, supreme, absolute, nothing, Krishna. Yes, they believe this is the highest, that I'm saving humanity. But the Bhagavatam calls them cheaters. But they don't think they're cheaters. They think, they really honestly, earnestly think they're helping. Why? Because the false ego is subtler than the intelligence. The false ego is manipulating the intelligence, which is manipulating everyone that they're speaking to. But if you're going to read Bhagavatam, you have to follow what Bhagavatam says. You must hear in disciplic succession of person Bhagavatams. And nasta prayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya. And you must hear every day. We must nourish our intelligence every day with the nectaring flow of Bhagavatam's mercy as it's so perfectly coming through parampara. Why is it all the acharyas, all the great acharyas unanimously agree on something? You cannot understand the Bhagavatam directly. That's why all of our great acharyas wrote commentaries of Bhagavatam or taught from the commentaries of other acharyas. Because the purport is every bit as important as the slokas. Because without the explanation, the slokas are unapproachable to our comprehension. It is a fact. The Srimad Bhagavatam began with four verses spoken from Krishna to Brahma. Yes, the nutshell verses. Why didn't Sukadev Goswami just tell Parikshit these four verses and then go back into the forest? Because it wasn't enough. Vedavyas, who received from Narada the teachings of the Bhagavat, he explained it in a very, very full, detailed way. Really, what the Bhagavatam is it's Vedavyas, Narada, and Sukadev Goswami's purports to the four verses. Yes? It's parampara. That's what the Bhagavatam is today. But we cannot approach that. Therefore, Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, their whole lives were just expanding on the teachings of the Bhagavatam. The purports are so very important. And Srila Prabhupada, his Bhagavatam classes that he ordered to be every single day in his temples all over the world, it's expansions on the purports. This is how Prabhupada wanted us to learn the Bhagavatam. There's the verse, then there's his purport, and he trained his disciples to expand and illuminate the purports. 1 hour class a day on only one verse or one purport. It increases and enhances our capacity to understand it. It enriches our intelligence. Of course, it only has that effect when the explanation is perfectly in harmony with the spirit of the purport. If we invent or imagine our own ideas, then we're spoiling everything. Prabhupada said many times that my only qualification is I'm not changing anything. The same spirit, the same knowledge, in his own very, very wonderful creative ways, is being revealed to us. According to time, place, and circumstance, there may be adjustments of how it's presented, but what is presented cannot be adjusted. That is absolute. That is parampara. Why do we hear Bhagavatam each day? So that our intelligence is refreshed, fortified with spiritual direction. So that our intelligence will remain chaste and faithful to the service of the soul. By keeping the mind and the senses and every faculty we have in harmony with the constitutional nature of the soul, which is to be enjoyed by Krishna. Nothing is mine. My intelligence, my knowledge, my abilities, my wealth, my influence over others, it's not mine. It all belongs to Krishna. It's all meant for the pleasure of Krishna. I am Krishna's instrument, Krishna's puppet, simply doing his will for his pleasure. Even if people condemn us, we're happy as long as we know we're pleasing Krishna. You cannot please everyone in this world. You'll go crazy if you try to do it, because everybody has their own ideas of what they expect of you. Yes? If you're a nice devotee, then the devotees will be very happy. But if you're deviating, Mahaprabhu, Prabhu may give you a call on the phone and tell you, what are you doing, Prabhu? Yes, he has done this many times. He's not pleased with you. So you can't please one person and somebody else if they have two opposing conceptions of reality. But if we please those who are representing Krishna, like Mahaprabhu, Prabhu, then we understand we're pleasing Krishna. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi. If Guru is pleased, Krishna is pleased. Doesn't matter if nobody else is pleased. That's the perfection of our life. But then we have to understand what pleases Guru. Not according to our interpretation, but as it is. Prabhupada has told us, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate and show love for each other. So if we think we could trample on each other's heads and do my service, and that's pleasing Guru, you're not pleasing Guru. That's not what Guru said he wants of you. He wants cooperation. He wants love and trust amongst devotees. That pleases him. even if you're fulfilling your particular service in such a way according to your guru's instruction, if you're not cooperating, if you're not respecting, if you're not acting like a perfect lady or gentleman to the devotees and to the public at large, then you're not pleasing him. To the extent you're deviating from this very principle instruction, you're not pleasing him. It's not that just people have their own conceptions of how to please God, therefore they don't need guru. But even people with guru have their own conceptions of how to please guru without understanding as it is. Srila Prabhupada would often say that everyone is saying, Prabhupada said, but I never said. Everyone thinks, I know how to please Prabhupada. Prabhupada said this. And it's usually some adjustment to Prabhupada's words according to what we want Prabhupada to have said. Yes, so many people have done, even during Prabhupada's time. Because within the Hare Krishna movement, if Prabhupada said, that is the law. Yes? So if you want to do something according to your own desire, then if you want to give authority to it, you somehow or other adjust Prabhupada's words to perfectly match what you want. You do some editorial and speak. Prabhupada has said, like this, so you must do like this. And even temple presidents sometimes would do that. They have their own idea. Prabhupada said like this. And the devotee would write Prabhupada, the president said I should do like this. Prabhupada said, everyone is saying Prabhupada said, I never said. Who is this rascal? Prabhupada was very... I was living in a community. And everyone was thinking that our leader is the representative of Prabhupada. He's such a perfect representative of Prabhupada. Whatever he does is absolute. Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. And I remember 1976, there was initiation ceremony. And one of the devotees from New Vrindavan were called up to get first initiation. And he came up. Prabhupada asked, what are the four regulative principles? He said, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. You vow to chant at least 16 rounds every day? He said, yes. And Prabhupada looked at him closely. He said, where is your kantimala? He didn't know what kantimala means. He just looked like, huh? He said, where is your neck beads? The person froze like a statue. Then Prabhupada said, who is the rascal that recommended you? Now everybody knew who recommended him. It's the leader of the community. So we were all frozen like statues. We didn't know what to do. He said, where is that rascal? Get out of here. So the person just went away. First he couldn't move. He was just like, he was reaching for his beads. He was reaching for his beads and Prabhupada was giving his beads and, where is your neck beads? He's like, who is the rascal that recommended this man? And he's like, he was like a lion. And we were all like this. So then somebody somehow or other took him away and he was walking. They put neck beads on him. Then they brought him back. He was... Then Prabhupada gave him the beads. Said, your name will be Pavitra. Everyone went, jai, jai, jai. But it was a very horrifying experience, actually. It was a very purifying experience. He was given the name Pavitra because he was purified. It's very difficult. So Prabhupada expected his leaders to teach as he is teaching.
And if they weren't, they were rascals. Arrivo.
It's a very, very great responsibility that we must understand what pleases Srila Prabhupada. Whoever we are.
You can be the biggest book distributor. I am pleasing Prabhupada. But if you're eating boga, and you're not chanting your rounds, and you're not following the regular principles,
you're pleasing Prabhupada a little, but you're also not pleasing him a lot.
Or if you're a big, big preacher, and you're bringing so many people,
but you're creating politics amongst devotees, you're playing one devotee off another devotee, creating dissension and disunity, you're not pleasing Prabhupada very much, because it's his fundamental principle. Follow the regular principles, chant 16 rounds, be a lady and a gentleman. Create harmony. Show your love for me by your cooperation. I was recently speaking with my dear godbrother Ambarish Prabhu in Moscow, just 2 days back. And he was giving a very beautiful realization. He was in Hawaii with Srila Prabhupada. There was one devotee. Actually, not one devotee. He was giving example of many devotees. And I personally had experience, and we all had this experience, of devotees who were really having difficulty doing their sadhana. Some of them weren't even doing it very well. Devotees who were not even able to follow the four regulative principles, even though they made vows. For these devotees who were fallen, but they were not critical of others, Prabhupada, he was very hurt by their fallen condition. It hurt his heart terribly. But he was so compassionate, so encouraging, so welcoming to try to attract these devotees to come back and be stronger. He did not condemn them. He did not ban them. He was always trying to help them. But then Ambarish said, because in Hawaii there's a lot of these kinds of people. Because Hawaii, Prabhupada said, it's a heavenly planet that happens to be on earth. One of the most dangerous places to try to be a devotee. Because it's so nice. It's not like Bombay, where it's hot in the summer and pouring rains and pollution and traffic and all kinds of people screaming all over the place. Crowded trains. Hawaii is beautiful, tropical hills, and crystal clear ocean. It's not crowded. Succulent tropical fruits. You don't even have to buy anything. You could just pick it from the trees. I know devotees just live for years just picking fruits. They didn't even have to get a job. So it's a very heavenly place. So in that heavenly place, you know, the tendency is the spirit of enjoyment becomes very strong. So devotees who were not following the principles, who weren't doing very well sadhana, and Prabhupada was like such a loving, gracious father trying to just encourage these people. But then somebody else came in who had very strong sadhana. Very strong sadhana. Who was very strict in the regulative principles. Who was a preacher. And he came in and he was complaining to Prabhupada about the leaders of ISKCON. He was criticizing Prabhupada's beloved leaders. Prabhupada chastised him and told the presidents, he's not allowed to give a class in our temples. Prabhupada was very, very displeased. He was more pleased
and kind to the fallen souls than those who were politically minded and those who were criticizing the disciples that he loved. Actually banned him and chastised him. Loyalness and faithfulness is a foundational quality of a good disciple. Sadhana, austerity, must be harmonized with that. Otherwise, even our great sadhana is not really so great in spirit if we're not faithful, respectful. If we don't love those who Guru loves and show that love. So we were discussing this point. What pleases Guru is something that we have to honestly analyze within our heart. Sometimes my temple is most important. And there has been times when one temple just literally undermines other temples. So the other temples are suffering terribly because you're plundering their resources just to build up your temple. And why are you building up your temple? To please Prabhupada. But then when Prabhupada hears that you're plundering another temple, jiva jiva sajivanam, because you're more powerful and bigger, he's not pleased. He wants us to respect and help one another. Prabhupada wanted results, but he wanted the results according to the Vaishnava principles. So if we want to make spiritual advancement, it is completely depending on how we're actually pleasing Guru. And pleasing Guru is not a matter of our interpretation or our editorial review. It is a matter of as it is. Vrinadapi sunichena torori vasihishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. If we're not trying to be like this, then there's a flaw, a serious flaw in how we're pleasing Guru. If we're not really trying to attentively chant the holy names, if we're not really trying to very, very strictly follow the four regulative principles, if we're not really trying to take a humble position of the servant of other Vaishnavas and create love and trust, if we're not acting respectfully with integrity to give a good name to Krishna, to the general public, then there is serious flaw in our pursuit of pleasing Guru. It's not just one of these subjects. We have to be faithful to all of them. And if we please Guru, we please Krishna. But how can we please unless we understand? Yes, the false ego is very big. Therefore, our intelligence has to give direction in such a way that we can counteract even the false ego. Therefore, we must hear submissively. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Krishna has explained. If you want to know the truth, you must go to Guru in a humble spirit. You must inquire submissively. Then you could understand what the Guru is saying if you're submissive. If you put your ego aside and just hear regularly and act on what we hear, that is service. When our intelligence becomes very much nourished in that way, but it is very important what Krishna is saying. Pranipata. We must first approach with humility, then we must inquire submissively. If we're inquiring egoistically, then the intelligence will not actually get it as it is. We have to humble ourselves. The ego must facilitate the intelligence to be nourished properly. That is what inquiring submissively means. Otherwise, our intelligence is completely colored by our ego, and it gets the wrong message.
Therefore, the beginning of spiritual life really is when we are like Arjuna. Karapanya doso pahata svabhava purichchami pam dharma samyutateha. That I don't know anything. I'm confused. Please tell me. That is the real beginning of understanding the Gita as it is. Humbling ourselves, admitting our own frailties, and approaching Guru, approaching Sadhu, approaching Shastra, approaching Krishna in this spirit to hear. Then whatever we hear will give nourishment to our intelligence, strength to our intelligence. Then our intelligence will understand exactly who we are. We're the eternal servant of Krishna. We're meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Let me utilize everything for pleasing Krishna, for Krishna's enjoyment, and put aside all the opinions coming from within and without aside. Then we are truly on the road back home, back to Godhead. Now, Puranjana, he's just meeting this beautiful woman who represents intelligence. And we will discover what will take place in future classes of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is very late. Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.